Okay, so yesterday we talked about some negative stuff, the shortcomings of our ancestors. But here's the good news. 40 years later, we were still standing. Not only were we still standing, we entered land, we conquered, and we're poised now to enter the original mainland of Eretz Canaan, or what's going to become Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu recounts all this. So today we're going to study a couple of verses from chapter 3. And in chapter 3, we are 40 years ahead of where we were yesterday. We're finished with the kvetching and complaining. We're finished with the unhappiness, the resentment against God. The Jewish people now are triumphant. The exact payment for Midian, for having been seduced and led astray. And at this point, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks of the victory over Sichon, and finally, the crowning victory over Og, the king of Bashan. And this was a very big deal. Why was it such a big deal? What was so unique about Og, Malach HaBashan? So let's find out. And we're also going to find out the power of community versus people happening to live together in the same place, the power of people living together for real. Chapter 3, Perek Gimel. Vanefen v'na'al derech ha-boshon. Now we turned. And we went up. We're heading north. And we're going into the Boshon. So the Boshon, I guess, would be in the equivalent of what the world calls Syria today. What happened? We came up to the Boshon. Vayetze Og, melech ha-boshon likrosenu. Og, the king of Boshon, came out to greet us. But he wasn't holding flowers. He came to greet us with a mighty army. Who? The Cholamai. He came out and his whole nation. And they came la'amulchama. They came for battle, for war. All the way to a place called Edrei. So in this place called Edrei, this is where we meet. Why does it say Vanefen? We turned. And then it says Vana'al. We went up. So Rashi says, at this point, the Jewish people are journeying north. Called Tzat Sofen, whenever you journey north, he aliyah. It's called going up. And this is pretty interesting because we're heading from the equator. The globe is round. So heading from the equator north, we're going up away from the apogee of the circle, if you will. And we're going north. And that's actually how it's been. People call it up north. Still call it up north. So what happened? Now we're going to get a sneak preview into what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking at this time. And we know that because he recounts what Hashem said to him. Vayomer Hashem Elai, God said to me, Al tira oisai, don't be afraid of him. Don't be afraid of Og. Now Og was a very large person, what we would call a giant. Hashem says, do not be frightened. Ki viyodcha nasati oisai, I have given him into your hands. The Eskol Amai, not only he, but it's his entire nation. The Esarzai, and his land. The Asisa Loi, and you will do to him. Kasher Asisa L'Sichain Melech HaMeiri. Just as you did to Sichon, the king of the Amori. Asher Yoshev B'Cheshbon, who's in Cheshbon. So the country of Sichon is slightly south of the country of Bashan. And Sichon was also a mighty king. There's also a fearsome military leader. And Sichon came out to greet the Jewish people. The Jewish people smote them, crushed their armies, captured the lands. Hashem now says to Moshe, don't be afraid of Og. Don't be afraid of the Bashanites. You'll crush them just as you crushed their neighbors, just as you crushed the Sichonites. And here the obvious question that one would ask is, why suddenly, when it comes to Bashan, does Hashem have to reassure Moshe Rabbeinu, telling him that everything will be fine? Just as you crushed his previous enemies, you'll crush him too. You'll be victorious. One would argue that now, Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jewish people have experience. They already did this. The first time you were afraid. The second time you said, what are you worried about now? You did this already. You were fine last time. It also was miraculous. It didn't make sense. the way you were able to defeat the Sihonites.
Nobody died when they went against
the Midianites. So this, it's not even the second. This is the third battle already. It's the third battle. This should be not a joke, but certainly not something that Moshe had been asked to be worried about. If anything, the worry should have been previously. And previously, Hashem does not reassure Moshe. He simply commands, instructs, and expects them to follow. Now, after the third time, he suddenly comes along and says, don't be afraid.
He was a giant.
Okay. Okay. That's Fabio. Titus Fabio is, he was a giant.
Special course, actually.
Oh, very good. Jack is right. So let's take a look. Let's see what Rashi has to say. It says, Rashi, why here suddenly is there this notion of Moshe Rabbeinu's fear or concern, and Hashem's reassurance is necessary? What happened here? Says Rashi, uvesichon, when it came to Sichon, lo hutzrich lomar al tiraso, didn't have to come and say, relax, you'll be fine. He didn't have to say that. Ella, the thing is like this. It wasn't from the military might. It wasn't from the flexing of his muscles or the power or size of Og and his army. But really, Misyare Hayo Moshe, Moshe was afraid, concerned, apprehensive. That the merit of helping Avram should not be in his stead. Shanema, as it says with regard to Avram, Vayovei HaPolit, the survivor came. Who is the survivor? Og. Vahu Og. And I think it's really interesting. Rashi over there proves that it's Og and talks to us why he's called the survivor. Here's the thing. Do you know why Og came to tell Avraham that Lot had been captured? Do you know why he did it? Because he wanted Sarah. And he knew that Avraham was crazy enough to go to battle. He's sure Avram would not leave his kinsman, especially when his nephew was captured, because he looked like Avram. He knew Avram would not sit back. He was also quite certain Avram would be massacred. So he tried to harm Avram. He tried to usurp his wife. And yet, what happened? Avram is victorious. And Avram becomes world-renowned. His fame waxes and grows, and everybody talks about Avram. Avram becomes extraordinarily successful. And all of a sudden, his message of monotheism is much accepted. So what did Og, what was his intention?
Wasn't good.
What was the impact?
It was good.
That's a schus. That's a merit. Imagine when you have good intentions. This might be compared to the famous halacha, that if somebody loses money and a poor person finds it, that the mitzvah of tzedakah is attributed. But I didn't intend to give any money. I wasn't even happy that he gave money. I didn't even know I lost the money. Nonetheless, it's still a mitzvah.
I thought that only applies to tzedakah.
This is like tzedakah.
So the Egyptians had merit because of that?
Egyptians? Who's talking about Egyptians?
They killed
our babies. They massacred our people. What are you talking about? They're terrible.
Look what came out.
Yeah, and millions of Jews were murdered. No, that doesn't work, Markela. You murder millions of Jews, and in the end, with Og, what bad came out? Nothing.
Hashem murdered most of them.
Huh?
Hashem murdered most of them.
Here's the point. Og may not have had the best of intentions. In fact, they didn't have good intentions at all, but something good happened. To Avram, if you know, that's still a schus. Now, I should point out to you that other Mefarshim have a different approach. The Ramban says that Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned maybe in the thick of battle previously somebody did something inappropriate. And that happens. In the thick of battle, people often do things which are maybe inappropriate. Maybe somebody took something he shouldn't have taken. Maybe somebody sinned. Maybe somebody got carried away. You put weapons into the hands of teenagers, young people, young men in their 20s, who knows what happened. So Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid maybe they sinned. And previously they were pure, they were holy, untainted by the bloody fruits of war. But here, after war, war denigrates it, destroys the spirit. Killing people is not pleasant, it's not nice. Judaism does not attribute holiness to war. Only a moral mandate, not holiness. The holy wars. So if it's no, there's no holy wars, and wars are horrible and terrible. So Ramban says that's why Moshe was afraid. Rashbam says, what did we call Og? What did we just call him in Rashi? Call him a pullet. He's a survivor. That means this guy has got 9 lives.
Who's on the ark?
He's been surviving ever since when? That's why Moshe was afraid. The guy's a serial survivor. Maybe he's going to survive now too. The Shachal Atayda says that Og went out to battle despite what happened to Sichon. What does that tell you? Why wasn't he afraid?
Powerful hatred.
He could tell you powerful hatred, or could tell you maybe he has a secret weapon. How come he's not afraid?
He has the bomb.
He has the bomb. That's not funny. Why isn't he afraid? The fact that he should have been intimidated. Sichon didn't know. It's a group of people left Egypt. They're sitting and eating manna and learning Torah all day. Were they going to come to me, to my armies? I've been training for this for 40 years. Sichon had no fear. But after what happened to Sichon, Og should have been afraid. Og should have hunkered down, fortified himself. Instead, he left his fortified cities and he attacked in an open plain. So you would think that kind of confidence instills fear in the enemy. But you know what? It did. Now Rashi rejects all this, very interestingly. Rashi is the only one who's the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the literal interpretation. Rashi gives us this midrashic thing about a zuchus, about a merit. And I'm going to tell you why. Because from a simple, straightforward perspective, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, and you have been receiving instructions from Hashem for 40 years, and it always goes well, what are you worried about? There's one thing that will concern you. What's that? A zchus, a mitzvah. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu here. Now, Ramban also a little bit deals with the idea of zchus, a mitzvah. But ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu had absolute faith in Hashem. And he even had faith in the Jewish people. They would be able to withstand the horrors of war. They would not be tainted by it because they were doing a mitzvah. What's the one thing to be concerned with? Maybe Og has a source. What happens? Vayiten Hashem Elikeinu v'yodeinu gam es Og. Hashem delivers into our hands also Og, the king of Bashan. V'yeskol amo, and his whole nation. V'anakeyu ad bilti hishalei sarit. We smote them until there was absolutely nothing left. Total, absolute victory. Vanilkaid, verse 4, we captured. It's called Arav, all of the cities, Baisi at that time. Loihoi Sakirya, there was not a single village. Ashalela Kachna, which we didn't capture, didn't take. Meitam. Shishim Ir, 60 cities. Kol Hevel Argov, the whole string of Argov, which is a euphemism. And Argov, Reb Saji Goren says, is the name of a place, like a province, like a region. So there's the Argov region. And the Argov region was densely populated with 60 municipal centers. And these 60 densely populated municipal centers, which was all comprised, Mamleches Og HaBashan, the king of Og HaBashan, all of this was captured. You think that these were easy cities to capture? It was no simple thing. This was no simple thing. All of these cities, Kol Elu Arim Bitsuris Chayma, they were all cities with fortified walls. Gavoya, very tall fortified walls. Dlosayim Ubriach, these had heavy locks, double doors. Levad Me'arei Aprazi, besides there was these villages and townships that had no walls. Harbe Me'id, so 60 major cities. In addition to the 60 major municipalities that were walled and protected, there were many other smaller areas where people lived, which you would call rustic or royal towns. And all of this was taken. All of this was captured. So let's zero in now on verse 4. He captured all the cities. And Nilkeid is called Arav. He captured all. Arav is plural for an ear or an area, a city. By Asa, he and that time. Lehoisa Kiria Ashaloy Lokachna. There wasn't a Kiria. What's a Kiria? Like in modern Hebrew, Kiryat this or Kiryat that. Kiryat Arba, Kiryat Gat. So it's an obvious question. And then we go back afterwards. There wasn't a Kiria we didn't take. Shishimir, 60 cities. We started off with cities. Then we went to Kiryot. Then went back to cities. We're talking about different places. It doesn't seem we're talking about different places. It's called Arav, all the cities. There wasn't the Kirya. And what were they? Shishim Ir, 60 cities. And then the Torah adds, in addition to the 60 cities, there were these open townships. So an obvious question that we could ask ourselves is, what's going on with this business of, what's going on with this business? Why is that the case? The Medrash Lamdeinu says that this shows us, the whole thing shows us a great miracle. Had everybody remained in their cities, it would have been extremely difficult. This is called hand-to-hand combat. In fact, the Medrash Lamdeinu suggests it would have taken a whole year to capture this area. Hand-to-hand combat. You have to attack each city. You have to lay siege in each city. You have to somehow get past the fortifications. So what happened? Og, Hashem infused him with super confidence. He came out. They left the cities. They said, we'll meet you. You won't even step into our land. Or whatever other arrogant ideas they had. And in doing so, we're able to capture all the cities. You didn't have to lay siege to the cities. The cities are wide open. The cities were empty to the population. Which does not explain to us why it says sometimes Ir and sometimes Kirya. What's the difference? And why would the Torah change language midstream? So there's not so many explanations on this, but the good news is that the Rebbe explains this in great detail. The Rogatch of Agon, the Tzofnes Paneach, as well as the Malbim, page Lamed Hei, they want to suggest that a Kirya is a city that's fortified, that has walls around it. But that doesn't work in our Pasuk here. It's a general interpretation. That doesn't work here. Why doesn't it work here? Well, Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh, it's one thing, but over here we're talking about the same places. We seem to be going back and forth between the Ir and the Kirya. And the Torah specifically says, "Kol Eila Arim Bitzurei Schema Gavaya." They were Arim with tall walls. So if you need a Kirya to have tall walls, why does it say these are Arim? An Ir with a tall wall. Doesn't seem to fit. So the Rebbe says like this, Miloshen HaKosov, from the intimation of the scriptural syntax, it's mashma, it seems, that Kirya eina zeha le'ir. Somehow, they're not exactly the same. The Zehu Shemachadash HaKosov, the Pasuk is coming to tell us something novel, something extraordinary. Shaloizu bovad shebnei Yisrael lochdu. It's called Arav. Not only did the Jewish people capture all the cities of Eig Melech HaBashem, Elohim Lokdu Af Es HaKiryos. They also took the Kirya. And that's the language of the Pasuk. So that's what the verse is saying. The verse says, not only did we take all of the ear, we took every ear, but in addition to every ear, we also took all the Kirya. Vanilka, it is called Arav. We took all the Arim, all the cities. There wasn't even a Kirya we didn't take. So what does that tell you? It wasn't even a Kirya. That means there's some kind of novelty in taking a Kirya. You would have thought that maybe a Kirya would have escaped. Maybe there'd be a Kirya that wasn't captured. A stronghold within a city? I don't know. Is that what it means?
But something different.
Let's see. It's something different. That seems very clear. We could all agree that it seems that it's something different. What is it? We're not sure. Bir HaDvarim. So here is our Rebbe's explanation. The Baal Seder HaDeiris wrote a number of fascinating works. One of the books he authored is called Erchei HaKinuyim, which is kind of like a dictionary. Description of terms. He took biblical terms and he described them. Explain what these biblical terms mean. In Erchei HaKinuyim, he explains that the Hevdel, the difference between an ear and a Kirya is as follows. Hagdara ir, city, is defined by its misyacheses lemokim kishalatzmei. The city is the place. The city does not describe the population that lives within. The city is the actual layout of dwellings. Beinim hum ochlus b'teshavim, beinim lav, whether people live there or whether people don't live there. It's a city. So gezunt, it's a city. The city is talking about the structures, the layout, the parks and recreation, the sewage, the artery, the traffic arteries, whatever, city layout. That's a city. Kirya le'umazos refers not to a city, but it's a kirya le'ir me'uchlesas. That refers to the population that lives in a city. A place that is shekeket chayim, a place that throbs and pulsates with life. Kiloshen ha'kosuv, like the language of the pasuk and found in the beginning of the book of Malachim, that it says over there, madua koil ha'kirya ha'ima, why do I hear the sound of teeming life? A sign of life, this teeming with life. So what's the difference in an ear? An ear is a description of a place, a location. The kirya describes a community. It describes, it's the definition of the population who is living there in unison. So the Rebbe suggests that based on this interpretation, we could understand the pasuk as follows. Ir asuya li yis makim miyushev. A city is a place which is built and designed for human dwelling. It's a place that's designed for urbanization. Urbanization means when many people live together. The Canadian model, incidentally, is urbanization. We live in a gigantic country. It's bigger than the country that's south of us. We have more land than the United States. We also have more polar bears than people. So there's 300 million people living in the United States, and we barely have 30 million people living here. That's 10%. So when you have a land mass that's greater than the United States, then you have 10% of the people living there, what is going to be your immediate problem? How do you provide services? How do you afford to have an infrastructure? The answer is, we couldn't. If we lived like the United States, with little townships all over the place, we would not be able to survive. So what's the Canadian model? Urbanization. I once asked my father-in-law, so how come it's called Chabad of Southern Ontario? He says, there's no people in Northern Ontario.
There's three.
So that's where everybody lives in Ontario, in the south of Ontario. That's where it's urbanized, around bottles of water. Okay, fine, Orillia has some people, I get it. Okay.
That's still Southern Ontario.
That's still Southern Ontario, exactly. That's the tip. Ontario is an enormous province. It's a gigantic place. But for the most part, even what we call cottage country, that's Southern Ontario. You're going to go north? That's like, there's nobody living there. Why? Where are you going to have hospitals? You're going to have infrastructure for food services, and you're going to have legal services, and you're going to have trunk and sewage lines. It's not possible. It's not possible. It just doesn't justify itself. We supposedly live in a Thornhill's like a suburb, supposedly. This is a city. It's not a suburb. People have tiny little amounts of property. Do you ever go to see what the United States suburbs look like? Enormous lots. A little house with an enormous lot around it. There's no enormous lots over here. Very few, at least. So the point here is, of course, that an ear is an urbanized setting. Urbanized settings. Urbanized settings are built to maintain an urbane population. Another possibility is when you have these places that people live sometimes, like a vacation town, where people, it fills up with people, and then it becomes like a ghost town. Because everybody only goes there for the holiday.
Cottage country.
Teishveh shel ir kazu, the people living in the city, einam nechashavim letzibur meuchad, are not considered a community. Why they're not considered a community? They don't know each other. They don't care about each other. They have absolutely no unifying factors. They happen to live in the same place. It's an oisef shel teishavim beidedim. It's a collection of many individual dwellers. It's not a community. For whatever reason, is gagalu b'mikra l'makamecha, they ended up living in the same place. La'umazais, conversely, kishimaduba b'kirya, what's a kirya? A kirya is a ir meleya o miyushevis b'derech keva. A kirya is a community. A kirya is a place that throbs with life. A kirya is a place where people live together. And because people live together, it's ba'alas mivne chevrati, what we call the modern Hebrew, community. There's a community infrastructure. It's yatziv umalukad. It's solid. It's a solid community. In times of difficulty, a community comes together. In good times, people are inspired to get together. Teshavim einam oisv teshavim boidim. It's not a collection of individuals. Ela nechshavim tzibur. It's a quilt work. It's a tapestry. It's woven together. It's a guf mochad. It's a body. People can attack a community, offend a community, embrace a community. Hama'agid b'seiches klal teshvayayir. This includes and unites together all those who dwell in the city. Ah, my friends, mikan nevas, if we are to say this, now we understand why kibusha shal kirya, kasha yeser mi kibusha shal ir, why it's so much more difficult to capture a community than to capture an urban center. A kirya is a tzibur ma'uchad. A kirya is a community. People are united. Ach, the zoo, this kind of unity. Maspekes hagona ruchni es l'teshva amokim. Besides the fact that it would be physically more difficult because they would unite and come together, even on a spiritual level, they have Hashem's protection. Why? Because they're united. Kvishim etzina b'divrei chazal, as we find in the words of our sages in a number of different places. Shafilu kishim edubar ba'ivdei avedah zarah. Even when we speak about idolaters, im shayrim b'neim shalom, if they live in unison, if they've coalesced into a communal unit, kaviyachol in asot negebam, it's as if they cannot be obstructed, they can't be stopped. Zui, my dear friends, this is Efek Havanas HaKosav Khan. This is the intention here of the verse. Leizul Bavacho B'nei Yisrael Kovshu Esa'arim. Not only did they capture the physical areas, not only did they march into empty towns and take control of them, Elafilya HaKiryes, even the neighborhoods, Ha'arim HaMu'uchlaseis V'lukadeis, the areas which were fortified, the areas which teemed with life, the areas which throbbed with the human condition, so to speak, people living together. Even this, Sha'amdo Lakach, Ha'agona Haruchnias, that metropolitan or area of neighborhood coming together, neighborhoods which are united, these united neighborhoods which have coalesced and become a single unit, they should have had Hashem's blessing, you would think. Even that, Le'amdu B'fnei B'nei Zol. And this fits beautifully into the interpretation of Rashi. And what was Moshe Rabbeinu afraid of? The S'chus, spiritual merit. Here too was another spiritual merit. They were united. Moshe Rabbeinu knew there was Kiryat over there. It wasn't just Orim. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu says to Am Yisrael, we captured them all. Captured them all. You see how Hashem loves you? You see how we can do this? And so Moshe Rabbeinu now begins to encourage and inspire the people to follow what Hashem says and to continue to move forward.